Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I am Larry Mueller, and today we're going to be talking about Wisconsin's legendary Aldo Leopold. And we have a couple of guests for you today. With me in the studio today is Jessica Cordier. She leads programs in the humanities, music, and dance for the UW-Madison Division of Continuing Studies. And Jessica, welcome to the show. Great to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
With us by phone today, Kurt Miney, who's been on the show quite a few times, actually, over the years. He's a senior fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation in Baraboo, an adjunct associate professor in the UW-Madison Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology, and a Leopold biographer. And Kurt?
Good morning, Larry.
Good morning to you. Great to hear your voice. Thanks for joining us today.
I wish I could be there with you in the studio, but the snow has kept me home.
The snow and the slush and the ice. Oh, boy. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll be talking about the Leopold series today and about Leopold himself. And I hope as you listen, you'll join in our conversation. Did Leopold, did his writings influence you? Experiences that you might have to share relating to Leopold? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email. The email address is talk@WPR.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page, title of our page, The Larry Mueller Show. And certainly love to hear from you. Kurt, we've talked about this in the past, but let's refresh my memory here. How did you get introduced to Aldo Leopold?
Yeah, Larry, you and I've been friends for a long while, and
yeah.
Back to my own graduate school days. And when I began to become interested in Leopold, I ended up doing my graduate work on Leopold there in Madison.
Yeah.
And the short story is that I came up to attend graduate school at the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies and ended up doing my graduate degrees focused on Leopold, because at that point, this is back in the 80s now, really there had been limited scholarship on Leopold. And he was kind of course, a well-known, really iconic figure, especially in Wisconsin, but even beyond and around the country and even overseas, you know, internationally. But there was not a lot of background information available to him. And so I began to dive into the archives, which are there on campus in Madison, and which, by the way, are now digitized and available to anyone to have a look at. And it was just a treasure trove, and it was a grand adventure in exploring our conservation history and legacy through Leopold. And, of course, it's especially important for us in Wisconsin, but it was an amazing opportunity to learn more about not just his story, but the whole story of conservation across the 20th century.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Yeah, and it still, of course, remains highly relevant. Many of the same questions that Leopold was dealing with in his life are the ones that we confront now in new and different ways.
Yeah. What kind of a guy was he? What was he like? Do you know?
You know, Larry, I was reflecting. In the early times when I was on your show, we'd often get callers who'd call in and say, you know, I took Leopold's class in 1946 in Madison, or, you know, my dad told me about Leopold, and so we had a lot of those firsthand, you know, accounts from our neighbors and fellow citizens here in Wisconsin. And, you know, after many years of talking to former students, family members, you know, he was universally respected. He had a little bit of an edge to him. He was a strong-minded and strong-willed person, but universally people said he was a wonderful teacher, especially if you had a chance to be out in the field with him. If you were especially even more lucky to be a hunting partner or fishing or camping partner with him, you really got a sense that this was a person who was deeply appreciated by those who had time to spend with him, and his family, of course, who have been really important parts of this community over the years, always testify what a warm father he was and how important that was to them and how that kind of got shown to the rest of the world through his writings.
Yeah. What, if you think about his influence on today's conservation movement, what do you think his main influence is?
Wow, it's a broad influence, and that's why he's a unique figure. He touched so many different fields in the natural resources, the humanities, But, you know, especially these days, I'm really focused on his really unique way of blending science, communications, and a concern for ethics. This is his hallmark. It's his great contribution to the conservation movement, to Wisconsin, to the world, was connecting, you know, our knowledge of how the world works, which science provides, with our judgment about what we ought to do with that knowledge, which is the realm of ethics. But then even more importantly, how do we communicate that to each other and to ourselves, and share that knowledge and share that commitment.
And he was a real, he was a good writer. He could write about technical, you know, about pretty technical things in a way that anybody could understand.
Yeah, and a quick word on that is he was late to that kind of the voice that everybody knows, that that beautiful prose from Sand County Almanac. It was really late in his life that he came to that. It was only when he turned 50 that he really began to write those essays. And so there's hope for those of us in our later years that there's still pools of creativity waiting for us. Right?
We still have time, Kurt. There you go.
But what's significant about that is that he really recognized how important it was to communicate this new way of understanding the world that we call ecology, right?
Yeah.
This understanding of the interrelatedness of all things in the world. That was new back in the 1930s and 40s. And Leopold, as a professor at the UW, you know, a walking case study in the Wisconsin idea, right?
Yeah.
The idea that this knowledge was absolutely essential to us as citizens in understanding our place in the world and on our role as citizens. And so he took it on as a very conscious role of being able to write clearly and compellingly to everybody about the significance of that new scientific information.
Yeah. You know, when I think about the Wisconsin idea, I can think about the Division of Continuing Studies because that's part of the Wisconsin idea. And Jessica Cordier, maybe tell us first about the talk about the Division of Continuing Studies.
Sure. The division is really the place to go for educational experiences that are kind of outside the traditional mold of a young, immediately post-high school undergraduate or people seeking graduate degrees. So there's all kinds of opportunities for, you know, if people are coming back to college after a long break or maybe not having started it right away after high school, continuing studies is one of the kind of funnels that helps those people navigate the gigantic university system. We offer various kinds of professional development, ongoing professional mm-hmm. development training for people in fields like human resources and management and various kinds of counseling. And then there's my part of continuing studies, which is the liberal arts and the humanities. And we offer primarily non-credit classes in the visual arts, in dance, in music, in history, in languages, in writing, all the kinds of classes that one would take if you were just curious about mm-hmm. the world and wanting to think about kind of what does it mean to be human in the world.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the broad range of areas that are covered and that people can take advantage of, they're so vast. It's such an opportunity for people here in the state. And, you know, when you think about Leopold, the series, well, first, why did you decide to do a series on Leopold?
Well, my colleagues and I in the arts and humanities, as I think many people face, you know, we sort of get our heads down in our own little fields and sort of plug away at that work and started to have conversations about what kinds of subjects or ideas could we do better service to if we offered classes that connected to one another.
Okay.
And Leopold really came up as an immediate first idea. I mean, obviously the strong Wisconsin connection is paramount here. And in continuing studies, we offer, we have a long history of offering classes that are about Wisconsin history and Wisconsin culture. Obviously, the idea of ecology and environmentalism is incredibly pertinent and changing all the time. And so it seemed that we could offer a range of classes that could honor his work. And so some of the classes we're offering kind of reflect Leopold's lifelong practice of being in nature and observing nature and paying attention to small details and sort of asking about the significance of those details. And then some of the questions or some of the classes we're offering are really thinking more about that land ethic idea that Kurt was just talking about. And what is that land ethic idea, and what does it mean now in contemporary circumstances?
Yeah. What is that land ethic, Kurt?
Wow, it's hard to boil down a rich idea.
In five words or less, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually it is fairly simple when you come down to the core of it. And that is the idea that land, yes, it is something we buy and sell, but it is ultimately cannot be just thought of as a commodity. Leopold understood land, as an ecologist does, as a community that we belong to. And that was a compelling and powerful idea when first, you know, he was articulating it back then. And now it's kind of, you know, we've gone through a lot of things over the last couple generations. We understand now that, again, the sense of connectedness to and within the landscape that everything depends on, and our economy, our health and well-being, our agricultural life, our concern for wildlife, and our traditions of recreation outdoors. Oh, so much is all connected to that. But unless the land is healthy, and that was his term, land health, and unless we adopt an ethical attitude to our stewardship of that land, we will be asking for problems down the road. And so, but that's kind of a negative way of putting it. His positive way of putting it more was that, you know, by understanding land as a community, we can derive our wealth and pleasure and inspiration from it continually. Mm-hmm. And this is really important, looking at the program that Continuing Ed has put together here, that a lot of emphasis on the arts and on the humanities and these other ways of understanding land that are open to us all.
Yeah. And as I look at these classes and events, I have that list in front of me. And Jill, do we have that up on our Facebook page? Oh, we don't have that. Yeah, we'll put it up. I'll tell you what, we'll put it up there so everybody has it. She'll get it up. She'll probably have it up in a few minutes, as a matter of fact. I'm thinking, oh, boy, I could attend. These are all sound interesting to me.
It's fantastic.
I really, you know, so we've got land ethics to start things off. Is there a class on that, or how?
Yeah, well, one of the classes is called Aldo Leopold's Legacy, The Land Ethic in Today's World. And that's really a kind of humanities style class. And I'm really excited about it. So we're going to gather for four different meetings. And each meeting is going to have one or more different speakers. So across the breadth of the class, we'll start with, actually, Kurt is going to do the first session of the class, mm-hmm. where he introduces us to Leopold and talks about the idea of the land ethic in more than just five words.
Yeah.
And then in the second session, Paul Robbins, who's the director of the Nelson Institute, is going to come in and I would say sort of complicate ideas about, you know, what does conservation mean? What does preservation mean? Anytime, I mean, I think the way that he talks about it is anytime you make a decision, you make a change. So if you have a plot of land and you put a fence around it and do nothing, that's creating one kind of change. If you have a plot of land and you put a fence around it and try and keep it over the course of 20 years the way it was at the beginning, that's a decision, and that creates mm-hmm. change. So sort of getting us into what are the ideas that one would grapple with if you're in the nitty-gritty. And then the third session, we're going to actually be at the Arboretum, the idea being, okay, if we take the land ethics seriously, what does it mean? What if you do have to make those decisions based on that idea on a day-to-day, year-by-year, over the span of 10 and 20 years kind of idea? So two of our colleagues at the Arboretum are going to first talk a little bit about how the land ethic influences their choices and then walk us through the prairie and sort of literally take us space by space, plant by plant, thinking about what they do. And then the end of that class is going to be Monica White, who is a relatively new professor here in at the UW in environmental justice. And her research is really on the history of black farmers. And I think one of the things that she can do for us is talk about the issue of race in the environmental movement. It's, I think, too often perceived as a primarily white movement, and she can talk about ways to complicate that. She can talk about the history of that, and she can also talk, I think, about environmental and ecological issues in an urban context.
So that course
can kind of walk us through the idea and its meaning in the contemporary setting.
And Kurt, would you, if you were thinking about, you're going to be giving a pretty good introduction to Leopold, but would there be something that people might read before something like that? Or just if they're not going to participate, just to more or less get them more familiar with Leopold's work?
Well, yeah, for sure. And, of course, always depends on the individual. Some folks are, of course, plenty familiar with Leopold's writing in Saint County Almanac, because it's such a classic, but there might be some folks who are relatively new to understanding Leopold and his work, and you always start with St. County Almanac, of course. But now we have available, you know, so much more. Even since I was first working on Leopold, he wrote a lot, and he was kind of thought of as mainly the author of a Saint County Almanac, right? Because that's how he became so well known. But in fact, he wrote voluminously. And so they're right now are available. You can go down to a good bookstore, the University Bookstore in Madison, or good bookstores around the state, and find other collections of Leopold's writings. And especially for people who have a little more deeper hunger for knowing his conservation outlook. These are things that he wrote over the course of a career that show his evolution, that show his struggling with difficult and complex ideas. And so it's fascinating to dip into those other writings as well. And, of course, then there's so many other writings by people who've been inspired by Leopold over the generations, including, you know, friends and colleagues here in Wisconsin who have become voices for the land ethic, but also around the country. So any good bookstore, go down and look in the nature section or, conservation section. You'll find Leopold's work and others who've been inspired.
Absolutely. Talking today about the legacy of Aldo Leopold and about a great series that you can participate in, as a matter of fact, through the Division of Continuing Studies. Our guest today, Kurt Meine, Senior Fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation in Baraboo, Jessica Cordier, leads programs in the humanities, music, and dance for the UW-Madison Division of Continuing Studies. We'll take some calls now. There's a line or two open for you. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer for the Ideas Network. At 11:45 today, we're going to be taking a look at sturgeons and sturgeon fishing and talk about the upcoming Sturgeon Spectacular in Fond du Lac. So I hope you'll stay with us for that. Right now, we're taking a look at Aldo Leopold and his legacy with Kurt Meine and Jessica Cordier. And glad to have them along. And certainly you can join in, too, with your own questions or comments. We'd love to hear from you. And we have some callers online here. And again, the number for you to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And let's see, I can get somebody on here. Ray and Rhinelander, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Larry.
Go ahead. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, and thank your host and both of you putting the show on. I think it's very important and apropos what's happening politically right now, but I'll leave that part at that. What really struck me about Aldo Leopold was in his earlier, younger years where he was part of eradicating timber wolves. And when he shot his last timber wolf, and when he poetically and spiritually and explained when he saw the green fire of the light burn out and go out of the eyes of the timber wolf, it really moved him.
Yeah. Kurt, maybe
you... I feel that, well, it moved me, and it moved many others. I feel that that was the start of his conservation and environmentalism, what he realized the truth of all this and what he needed to do. It helped me, and also to take off the Sigurd Olsen and what he did with wolves. Wolves are self-maintaining animals. They don't need to be regulated by humans. You know, it's just ridiculous, some of this stuff. But I don't want to get too heavy on that. But anyway, thank you, Elder Leopold. Thank all of you and everyone else who's ever read him. He is an amazing person. And just thank you.
Well, thank you very much for calling. And maybe, Kurt, a comment from you?
Well, sure.
Do you think that was a turning point for Leopold?
Well, we could do a whole show just on that one incident and story of it, because it was one of the landmark moments in Leopold's life. It happened when he was a very young man, in fact, just a few weeks into his first job. But it took him decades to fully appreciate the profoundness of that moment. And, in fact, he didn't write that famous essay called Thinking Like a Mountain for 35 years afterwards. And over those years, he went through an evolution in his thinking and in his sense of value in the natural world. And to kind of boil it down, if I can, he began to understand scientifically the role of wolves in ecosystems in a new and different way. And this was at a time when really there was no science at that point, and he was at the forefront with other colleagues around the country. And understanding that wolves are essential parts of ecosystems, and that ecosystems have ways of working that require us to rethink our role within them and our relationships. And he boiled it down into that essay at a time when it was, as it is now, a very controversial topic. But he always put his first foot forward when it came to understanding scientifically how these systems work and how we affect them, and then what that means for our sense of values. And again, it's rich, it's controversial. I know you've had other shows on with our friend Scott Craven and others over the years, Larry, that get into this. But it was for Leopold a landmark moment. But it is important to say that he changed his mind, but he did so, you know, based on changing knowledge and changing scientific understanding. It was one of the hallmarks of his personality that he was willing and able to change his mind when facts required it.
Yeah. Dave in Augusta will give you a chance now. Hi, Dave. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, guys. Hey, I used to work at the Arboretum back in the 70s, and I've got introduced to the San Quentin Almanac by Gene Moran, who was a real good friend of George Vukelic. And I've read that numerous times, and it's great every time I read it. I'm just going to pass along to the listeners, if they want to see some really cool photos of Aldo Leopold, is to go to the Soil Science Building on campus.
Yeah.
That's at 1525 Observatory Drive. And then, of course, the UW Arboretum's got a really nice display, too, at 1207 Seminole Highway. But, as spring approaches, hopefully, it's a good time to think about Aldo Leopold and the research that he did.
Yeah. Dave, thanks a lot for calling. Jessica, comment?
Well, I would just say, actually, in response to both of those, I mean, it's Leopold, of course, was a trained scientist, and I think a lot of our audiences for this program may not be scientists.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that both of the things that have come up are really reflective of that early and lifelong practice that he had of going into natural environments and observing them, you know, sitting with quietness and sitting with curiosity. And that's really something that I think is just unto itself a practice that's valuable for all of us to think about how we can emulate that, and you know, what we can learn from that, what we can observe about our own changing experiences and our own changing minds, and how that can inform our own sense of connection. And then, you know, thinking forward to the land ethic, how that has implications for the choices we make on a day-to-day and larger scale basis.
You know, just kind of, you know, everybody's mentioned San County Almanac, and Jessica on Facebook says she had a very good teacher in middle school, and a San County Almanac was on their required reading list for natural sciences. This is in middle school. That teacher and that book sent her on a lifelong journey in the conservation club at school and on to Trees for Tomorrow, made her more aware of the natural world. At nearly 40, she would still rather be in the woods than in the mall. She says she will be forever grateful to that teacher for introducing her to Aldo Leopold at that very impressionable age. And it worked for her. It probably worked for a lot of people, Kurt.
I could tell you stories from now till the end of the day of folks who've come up over the years to tell me their story. You could do a book about the book and how personal it is for so many people, how it really did shape their careers, their lives, their families. It's an extraordinary legacy. What's interesting now, Larry, is to see, after all these decades and generations now, how that changes. Obviously, you know, something written in 1948 is not going to resonate quite the same. The language is going to change and the ideas and all that. But fundamentally, this, the way Leopold related his understanding of the natural world and of our relationships to it still resonates. And I can tell you, because I get emails every day on this from people, I'll just give a very quick story. Just last night, over at Ohio State University in Columbus, they showed our documentary film on Leopold called Green Fire. And it was a student audience, and I sat in with them via Skype and had just a wonderful conversation with these students not in Wisconsin about how important Leopold's story was to them.
Jake in Oshkosh wants to chime in. Let's go there. Jake, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Good morning. I was listening to your program, and I couldn't help but think about what I watched last night on Wisconsin Public Television. Rachel Carson and Silent Spring,
yeah,
in that era. And I'd like to get a comment from yourself and your guests about that special. And in my opinion, my comment is there's a lot of unprosecuted criminal conduct that was done in that era. And I wonder if your guests are thinking the same today about the environment.
All right. Well, let's get a Kurt, we'll turn to you first.
Yeah, well, in fact, because I was on the Skype call last night, I had to miss watching the new documentary on Rachel Carson, which I really regret, because it's another key part of our environmental and conservation legacy is understanding her story, how significant it was. Well, Leopold and Carson worked in the same circles. They actually had a lot of similarities, but they also had some differences in their outlook on things. There's always been a diversity of viewpoints within the conservation world, and a lot of it came down to the fact that Rachel Carson was not a hunter and had some issues with Leopold's practice of hunting, but that's another conversation. Fundamentally, they were in this deep agreement, of course, on understanding how ecology and the natural sciences reshape our understanding of our relationships. And they were also looking at and working at a time when agriculture in particular was beginning to change dramatically in the post-war years. So to me, the most important thing to come out of these stories is for especially the younger generation to understand the historical figures and how they, you know, we stand on their shoulders, how they laid the foundations for both our progress as well as the continuing challenges we have in solving these problems. So,
yeah, interesting. There's a woman who has done, and I'm not sure she's doing it right now or not, but over the last several years, who has takes on the persona of Rachel Carson and does a kind of a play, sort of, of herself as Rachel Carson, which is very, very interesting. I think if you go on online, you can probably find a I'm sure you can find a video of her doing that presentation. So, of course, that's an aside to what we're talking about a little bit today. Jake, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And I didn't see that either. I saw an earlier movie of Rachel Carson, which I found interesting as well. and emailed to say to thank you, Kurt, by the way, for the book that you've written and edited on Leopold. Right now she's reading The Essential, Aldo Leopold, by seeing all those specific quotes on the variety of topics important to Leopold. She's senses more and more that he was and what he was, who he was, and how he developed. So a big thanks to you. And she has also a Sand County Almanac on her nightstand, has for years, and never tires of reading it.
Well, I appreciate that. That book came out of actually trying to ward off all the email requests I used to get for can you tell me where Leopold said this? And that was taking up a lot of time, so we just decided we better do a book out of it.
Well, makes good sense. Well, let's turn back to the classes and events that are coming up, Jessica, because I want to be sure to talk more about them. You talked about the Land Ethics series of four classes. What else is in store for us?
Well, I'm noticing, you know, a lot of people who are deep admirers of Leopold, and especially the writing and the way that he writes. And so one of the things that we're offering is a class called Writing Nature, Signatures in the Wild. So for those of you who are deep admirers of nature and also maybe budding writers, this might be of interest. This is also a class that's actually going to meet at the Arboretum. So the idea with this class is each class meeting, there will be reading some kind of writing, a little selection from somebody who has incorporated writing about nature in some ways. So obviously, there will be some Leopold, but there will be some poems by Mary Oliver, some selections from John McPhee and other writers in fiction and nonfiction and poetry. So reading, and then as a group talking about that, the instructor talks about reading like a writer to understand the kind of writerly aspects of that, and then engaging in doing some writing projects of your own, probably inspired by the immediate context of being out in the Arboretum.
Yeah, what a great... Talk about a great place for inspiration. That would be it.
Yeah, indeed. In fact, we have a couple classes that are meeting out there. There's also a nature journaling class that's going to be taught by the artist Helen Klebisaddle. And that's, again, both of these, as well as some of our other classes, are, as I've said a couple of times, sort of emulating that observational practice. So starting with paying attention and then moving forward with how do you express what you've learned from that, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's visual sketching or painting or in writing.
Very cool. Let's go to Adrian and Cable next just for a call. Adrian, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and Kurt. I want to talk about recent experience I had. I've been very much affected by Aldo Leopold across much of my life. As many as you may know, I worked a lot with the wolf population in Wisconsin and have had the pleasure of seeing that population recover within the state. And last month, my dog and I took a 3.5-week road trip, and it included a drive through New Mexico. And we visited the Leopold Vista at the west end of the Gila wilderness area. And so we were very close to the spot where Aldo Leopold probably shot his wolf. And I know Kurt is probably very familiar with that area. And just kind of reminded me, because in the past I've had opportunities when I worked with the DNR where I had to retrieve dead wolves out of the wild. And I know that we had one situation where the wolf had been seriously injured but had to be euthanized. And that green fire dying in the eyes, I saw that, and it was a very deja vu sort of experience, because I'd read that Thinking Like a Mountain so many times. It just felt like I've been here before, and was really quite a moving experience. But in any case, I thought I'd share those experiences, just getting a chance to see the Gila wilderness area and the Leopold Vista.
Well, Adrian, thank you so much for calling. Adrian Weideman, who was in charge of our wolf recovery program within the DNR, and did a fantastic job over many years. Kurt, a comment from you?
Well, first, Adrian, great to hear from you. And, yes, thank you so much for your years and years of public service. Really appreciate it. You know, as he was describing, I do know that landscape quite well. I've worked down there a lot. And it relates to this whole project that Jessica's put together. What Adrian was getting at there is, how do we get the most out of our experiences, our unique personal experiences in the outdoors or in any setting. It can be in a city. It doesn't have to be in the Gila Wilderness. It can be anywhere. But how do we, you know, make the most of all these rich experiences that all of us have every day, but sometimes we don't get the chance to sit back and really reflect upon what's going on and what it means to us. And this was Leopold's gift, was to be able to translate those experiences through his science, through his ethical framework, through his sense of beauty, to really enrich our lives, which is really what conservation is all about. And so this program will give opportunities for that. It's what we do at the Leopold Foundation every day. And what Adrian was describing there was exactly that. Knowing where you are and what those relationships or the history of the landscape is and the drama that takes place every day in every place.
And as I look at the, we haven't even discussed all, I mean, there's nine or ten different classes or events associated with this entire Aldo Leopold series. And, you know, we'll have a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. But if you go to, where do you go for details on that?
Yeah, the website where you can get links to all of the classes, it's very simple, is go.wisc.edu/Aldo Leopold.
So go.wisc.edu.
And if I could squeeze in a little plug, too, there are other events that are going on related to Leopold and his legacy all the time. And if you go to the website of the Leopold Foundation, which is aldoleopold.org, you'll see a little tab there that has events listed on it. And there's stuff going on all the time in lots of places. And so, and in fact, in particular, coming up in early March, the first weekend in March, is always Aldo Leopold weekend in Wisconsin and beyond. And you'll see a lot of activities going on around that time, too.
Yeah.
One thing that might be of particular interest to all of the Sand County Almanac fans is the Arboretum's, I believe it's on a Saturday, Madison Reads Leopold, where people will be reading selections from Sand County Almanac pretty much through the entire day.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool day. And that actually happens around the state. There are simultaneously many communities that have my old friend Jim Packard, rest his soul, was a reader often for that series. And this series, by the way, are there costs associated with these events?
Yeah, there are costs, but we try to keep them, you know, reasonable, recognizing that we're a state institution. So I think that although each of these programs has a fee, it's a fairly reasonable fee for the amount of education involved.
And so if you go to go.wisc.edu/Aldo Leopold, you're going to find the whole series of events that are going to be taking place as part of this UW-Madison Division of Continuing Studies. Always great to talk about Aldo Leopold. Thank you both so much for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks, Kurt. Hope to see you for a beer sometime.
Amen.
Amen. Amen to that. Kurt Miney, a senior fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation in Baraboo, an adjunct associate professor in the UW-Madison Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology. Jessica Cartier leads programs in the humanities, music, and dance for the UW-Madison Division of Continuing Studies. Take a look. We didn't mention all of the different programs, so be sure to go online either to the site I mentioned or to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'll have it up there as well. Always fun to talk about Aldo Leopold, and particularly fun to talk about these great opportunities for you out there. And there are more opportunities as well coming up in the very near future, as a matter of fact, relating to Wisconsin's probably its biggest fish, I guess, overall, the sturgeon. We'll be talking with Kathleen Schmidt-Klein and Craig Molitor coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.